All right, Mr. Chairman, now you're recording.
Okay, thank you, Chuck. I will go ahead and call the meeting to order and let's initiate the roll call.
Okay, Jagadasan Krishnamurthy.
Yep.
Brian Kirkland. Eddie Cook.
Here.
Jeffrey Fleetum.
Here.
David Byers.
Here.
Tim Romer.
Good afternoon. I'm here.
Thank you. Lev Gonick. J.R. Sloan.
Here.
Representative Nguyen. Senator Gray. And Rebecca Pereira for Richard Stavnik.
Here.
And Mr. Chairman, I believe Mr. Kirkland joined, so I'm going to call his name again. Brian Kirkland.
Present. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
All right. Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone, to our September edition for ITAC. We do have a pretty full agenda today, so we will do our best to keep things moving. We'll remind everyone that this is a public meeting. We do follow the public meeting law relative to that. We provide an opportunity if you have a comment on the agenda. There's a link there to fill out a form, and the team will disposition your comment. With that, let's go ahead and we'll start in our first item of business, which is review and approval of the August 17th recording as record of our previous meeting. Any discussion on that? Otherwise, I will take a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the recording of the August meeting as our minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Fleetum. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. Thank you very much. Next up, we have our consent agenda. If there's no discussion or desire to dig into those items, we will deal with that in one motion. So first, any discussion? If not, I'll take a motion with regard to our consent agenda.
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Fleetum. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Again, that is unanimous. Thank you, committee. All right, we will get into our first item that is up for a full presentation and vote, and that will be Office of the Courts on their probation case management system. I will go ahead and let the committee know that our member Byers is going to recuse himself from the discussion to vote on this. But he's here to I'll say listen in on the proceedings. So with that in mind, we will step forward.
All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Haley Greenberg. I'm an engagement manager with the Arizona Department of Administration. I am joined here today by members of the Administrative Office of the Courts who will introduce themselves after a brief overview of the project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the custom developed adult probation enterprise tech tracking system, also known as APETS, has served as a statewide case management system for adult probation for over 20 years and has reached its end of life cycle and is in need of replacement. The court requires a statewide approach using a solution that meets the needs of their very diverse user groups. The most sustainable and efficient solution going forward will be a commercial off-the-shelf system designed for the management of probation cases. And while the priority is on replacing the adult system, the solution is also a functional fit for their juvenile probation activities and would unify county processes. Currently, the Administrative Office of the Courts has sufficient funding to develop the adult probation case management solution. Additional budget is being requested for ongoing SaaS operational costs, as well as a potential development of the juvenile probation solution. The project team is prepared to discuss the funding strategy during the presentation. At this time, I will turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Haley.
In the interest of time, since you do have a full agenda, let me just introduce the members of our team. You know Mr. David Byers, Executive Director of the Courts. I'm Carl Heckert. I'm the Chief Information Officer. Online with us is Shanda Breed. She is the Director of Adult Probation Services. Joe Kilroy is the Director of Juvenile Justice Services. Mike Cimino is the Chief Probation Officer for Maricopa County. And Neela Pittum is the project manager who's been assigned and has been working this project for over about a year now. And in addition to that, Tyler has their management team is also listening in. Their lead for this is Mr. Bona Nasution. So any questions, they're available to help answer those. Next slide. Let me overview kind of probation first for you. In Arizona, probation is a statewide function, both at the adult and the juvenile level. We have in the adult space, there's about 80,000 persons on probation that we supervise across the 15 counties. In the juvenile area, it's kind of divided into two chunks. There's the delinquency side, roughly 20,000 juveniles are supervised, managed through the delinquency process. About another 16,000 in the dependency side. And those are all covered underneath the systems that we're discussing here today. We have, within this system, our counties operate differently depending on if you're large or small. Obviously, Maricopa and Pima County, very large counties, very discrete units that operate those. But we have about 8 counties which are much smaller in population, and they have combined juvenile and adult probation departments. Today, we have 2 separate and very unique case management solutions, which creates some challenges out there as we move through that. The APET solution was built as a Y2K solution. Maricopa County had its own probation system that couldn't make the Y2K cut. And we bonded together the AOC and Maricopa's development team, and we built APET. So it was that Y2K solution. We rolled it out statewide. JOLTS, which is the juvenile system, was actually, I think, one of the court's very first automation systems. It was built by Maricopa County to manage juvenile court activity. And it was then rolled out across the rest of the counties. It was very functional there, worked very well, so we rolled it out. We rewrote that in the early 2000s and rolled out what we call JOLTS AZ in about 2010. That started implementation across in the counties it was in. So that's been out there for a decade or more, and we've been maintaining and moving it forward. But again, 2 very unique systems between the two, driven by the fact that both departments said they had very unique needs and couldn't cross-populate. When we started this project, looking at what it takes to replace APEPS, because the APEPS system itself, being a Y2K solution, is built on some very old technology stuff. Fundamental of our concern there is power building. It was a great idea in the 1990s, not such a good idea anymore. Although we are finding we have better luck recruiting employees out of the retirement sector than we do any other. So maybe it would be good to keep it. It's reached its obvious end of life, needs a replacement. As we started looking at that, we engaged in conversations with Maricopa County, who was also looking at the fact that it just wasn't meeting their needs anymore. They had increasing needs for managing a virtual workforce. This was before we started this conversation, before the pandemic, and there were conversations then about needing to get officers out of the office and so dependent on that fixed technology set. And so they were interested in moving forward. So we started this planning process. To come up with a new system, it would give us much better idea at the analytical level. What's our data telling us? What are the trends? Both of our probation groups have gone into evidence-based practices models, which require better data, better analysis of what's going on in order to adjust programs to make things work better. So we needed a better set of analysis. We needed better mobile tools. We needed a more firm foundation of systems underneath us as we move forward in where we were trying to go. And obviously, we're spread out across the entire state, so there's a very diverse kind of infrastructure required to support all of that. So that brought us down to a need to put a system in place. If we go to the next slide, we in the beginning of this, we went out and with Maricopa County worked with the Gartner Group, who came in to acquire our requirements, assess what our needs were across the board, and built a pretty comprehensive RFP, which ended up finding out on the street last fall, late fall, and went through a pretty intensive evaluation process. Out of that, we chose Tyler Technologies. It's a cloud-based system built for probation services. It's used by a number of jurisdictions across the country, run on the AWS cloud, and it can handle, we were primarily focused on the system must meet our adult probation needs, because that's our biggest risk point. But we were very interested in seeing, could it also do juvenile in a way that cohesively did everything they both needed and met their needs, and would allow us to cross-populate those counties that have shared staff across that. So the Tyler solution was picked. Across the board, we had people from all the counties participating in a review of that system, very excited about it. It has all of the case monitoring and reporting capabilities. It's cloud-based, browser-based kind of application set, so it's very mobile, very flexible in the infrastructure. It increasingly, we need, as we move to this virtual officing and virtual workforce models, we need to deal with the paperless kind of world. We don't all have access to the physical files anymore. So we need a system that could definitely manage all of that in a very digital kind of way. And then we wanted to have a system that gave better access, not only to our officers, but also to our clients. Probationers should be able to access certain services and things online through the internet, report their activities, interact with their officers. And so should our providers, treatment providers and assessment providers should be able to access through an online portal and be able to update information and receive and do automated workflow kind of processes with that. So that's the solution that we have selected and are moving forward with. Next slide. So in this project, we're going to take this project on as a commercial off-the-shelf product. I mean, that was number one criteria. This thing had to be off-the-shelf. We were not interested in a custom development. We don't want to be in that mode of having to have a full-on program modification service out there, building and enhancing custom code all the time. As you know, that's very difficult to find people to do that these days. So we were hopeful when we went in it that we would find a system that would do that. We have found that system. But obviously, when you go into a system like that, you go in with the notion that says, my business practices, which we've been using for two decades because we've had these other systems, may have to change. That was on the table, and that was almost a unanimous agreement across our probation units that, yep, that is what's going to happen. That's where we need to go, and we are more than willing to go there. So we adopted this project on that basis, and fundamentally we're evaluating the system to say which vendors give us the best solution that drives us down meeting all of our functional needs, even if we have to change some of our business process needs. So we broke this project down into these components. We've been working with Tyler for the past couple of months as we worked through the contract negotiation and project kind of initial planning phases. Kind of lay out who's going to do what in this process. Virtually all of the development configuration activities are pushed over into the Tyler side. That will be their primary function. We'll be working heavily with them. We have identified a very large team across the state of individuals from the county. So we have county coordinators in every county that do the technology coordination function. They've been doing that for years. They'll be participating in this team. There are subject matter experts that we brought in at various parts of the system to make sure we're discussing and configuring the system correctly. And all of those are kind of being brought to bear by the counties themselves. The AOC will be bringing on a team of business analysts to help drive and coordinate this activity across those, and ultimately to transition the training model. So the vendor will engage will develop all of the training. They will do the initial training for our pilots. And then we will transition that off into a state activity so that we have the ability to increase, roll out the remaining counties later in the project plan, which I'll show you, and be able to sustain that in an ongoing kind of way. as we have staff turnover and all those kind of things. So we're moving into that basic kind of model. There is already a governance team has been put in place. It's been functioning for probably over a year now. They were guiding through the RFP process and have been preparing for kind of the policy decision-making kinds of activities which will take place. Mike Cimino, I think, is chairing that as we speak. So they're prepared and ready to jump on the ball in this project and take it forward. And because this is a cloud-based activity, these are activities that the state will no longer have to concern itself with so much. We will not be in the development business. We'll be in the requirements and project management business. Tyler will manage any enhancements to the system are necessary. They'll be putting out their regular releases. They'll keep it up to speed on the security front. And they'll manage the operational infrastructure as a cloud-based infrastructure. Next slide. So what does success look like here? I kind of told you what we were looking for, so that kind of drives this whole success conversation. But basically, this is going to be a big communications exercise, and we're gearing up for that. We have 15 counties. We need to keep all of those on board as to what's happening, how the processes are changing, what the policy decisions are, how that will impact their day-to-day business processes. That business process standardization is a very big conversation that the governance team will be taking on as we cross the bridge on things that need to change. Some of that will develop into policy and code revisions for how the probation offices operate. Clearly, training is going to be a big deal here. There's going to be a lot of changes coming down, a lot of new features and functions available for our probation officers and for the probationers. So there'll be a big emphasis on this training scenario. Lots of staff involvement will be happening. We do not want this to become a built in the ivory tower and deployed out to the masses kind of project. This will be driven from the needs and the activities that have to happen at the atomic level of the probation departments. And it will be important here. We've learned this the hard way in many projects in the past that a pretty tight governance model is going to be necessary to keep on top of this thing, make sure everybody's delivering the parts and pieces. I mean, let's face it, in today's market where there's so much staff turnover, this can become a real death knell to a project. Luckily, as you'll see when I show you the project plan, this project is going to move very aggressively. So we should be able to drive through much of it before the 2 to 3 year staff retention cycle seems to run out. So clearly, this is a new modern technology system, gives us a great foundation to build off of and all that flexibility we've talked about. Our first phase of this project will be adult probation. We've taken the approach that said that is our mission critical piece because we're not sure that system's got more than a few years left in it. So we need to get those adult probation offices up and running. And when that's done, we have an option in this contract to do the juvenile probation. So our juvenile probation is very excited about it. Devil's in the details. So we want to see how it functions, how well it rolls out to the adult probation departments, and then we'll make a determination on proceeding with the juvenile probation component, which would displace our old JOLTS AZ system. Next slide. This is the project timeline, and let me just hit the project approach here a little bit. Within the first 2 years, two plus years, you'll see that we bring all of the statewide probation online with this new application. Pretty aggressive timeline. One of the ways we're going to get early value off of this is this track 1A pilot that you see at the top. There's four counties we've committed into an implementation of the base product simply configured to the way the state wants to do business. So all of the users will come together, they will learn kind of how that system works, all of the subject matter expert kind of users, not all the probation officers. And we'll look over how that system's going to play. We will configure it in a standardized way for the state, and then we will roll it out. Right? The RFP lists off a lot of enhancements and things that we would like to see done to the system, which the vendor is committed to. But we believe our initial four counties can operate in the system the way it is. So we will configure and we will roll that piece out. So we get a pretty early success. By the end of the first year, we've got four counties up and functional. In the middle of that, once we get that configuration done, while we're moving through that rollout exercise, you'll see track 2A at the bottom there is Maricopa. So Maricopa is our largest county, it's our highest needs county. And a lot of those enhancements are kind of high volume, bells and whistles, things that we would like to have to support a county at that volume level. But we will begin the project there, building those parts and pieces out. And that will include integration. So there's a lot of integration aspects to this that we won't be doing in track one. We'll be adding those in this track two scenario. And then as those are complete, roll them back out to those counties. So we start getting the advantage of those activities that are coming in. And then once we're finished, so as we finish with, as we're continuing that enhancement cycle, we finish track 1A, we will then do the remaining rural counties, kind of back to back. We'll implement all of those, convert their data, bring them up. And once the Maricopa activity is well underway, we'll begin the FEMA activity. So we've got a lot of parallel processing across this of different skill sets. And we will continually be rolling out enhancement sets that the courts have already implemented as the new bells and whistles are built out for the probation system. So at the end of 2+ years, 2 years and 3 months, something like that, we should have the adult probation project done and all counties up on it. That'll allow us to shut down the old APEP system and take that risk off the table and give us an opportunity there to do an assessment as to, okay, how well did that go? Rest the staff for a few months, stabilize, and then kick off the juvenile probation project, which you see laid out for the rest of the time. And it follows a similar model to what you saw in the adult probation side of this. Okay. Next slide. So I won't spend a lot of time here. I mean, this is really a reiteration of what I showed you in a picture before. This is kind of the breakdown dates and times if you're interested of how the project will go. Next slide. Oops. Where'd the project cost go? Oh, there. Okay. This project was going to be free for a minute there. Okay. So this is how the project cost will break down based on the contract that we're preparing to sign off on. So again, it's a project across 5 years. Your 5-year total cost of ownership kind of model kind of lays right over this nice one. It's got a there's the development, which is kind of an enhancement, and software as a service licensing models are built into the operational costs or this license maintenance fees. And here's the professional services costs up at the top. So it's about $3.5 million in that first year, which we consider all development activities. Then in the second year, we're actually in production with our first set of counties and beginning to roll increasing numbers of counties out. You'll see the licensing cost starts to increase as the software as a service pay model starts kicking in. But we're still doing development on that activity. So you see the development budget's about $2.4 million, the operational budget's about $2.3 million. Then we transition off to year three. And you can kind of see as it goes. We start kicking in the juvenile development and moving that forward. So average operational costs on this are going to be about $4.5 million a year across the entire project phase. If we do both adult and juvenile probation, it's about $7.6 million. And I will say before I get the question, because I know there's probably going to be a question on this, where is this money coming from? So the project is funded at this point out of our special revenue funds. We have the money to do the development activities. So getting the software set up, getting it through those activities, we would be funding with our special revenue fund. What we're seeking from the legislature this year is money for the ongoing operational costs. So we have a $4.5 million appropriation request in for operational money moving forward on this project. Okay, I think that's the last slide, and I will pause for any questions.
Mr. Chairman, it's Brian. I have a question.
Go ahead, Brian.
Can you explain the sizable delay in year three, like where there's no development activities and nothing on the roadmap? Why put that time in the middle?
It's a pause point just for stabilization. We will have rolled out a lot of functionality and a lot of change through those first 2 years. So we built a pause there just to stabilize all of that, make sure we were solid, and then kick off the juvenile probation project, should that be deemed to be a wise option. So there's that, it's just a gap built in there.
Okay, and then just a follow-on question. A lot of times when companies roll out proven SaaS products, they get in the business of trying to make the new product work the way their old thing did because they're comfortable with it. Sounds like you're doing the right thing with the first four in that 1A pilot. Is there an effort or an initiative around, do the rest of the counties actually need customization or drive them towards the standard product and minimize those costs? I heard you say Maricopa needs things that are based on the scale of the work being done or the number of cases to manage, that kind of thing. But I would assume a product you mentioned early on has been used by other areas, they face a similar problem. So I'm just curious if much of this effort is making the product unique versus using it out of the box, and if there's an opportunity to drive our counties towards standardization there.
Well, we will drive towards standardization. So even those enhancements that we'll be making in what you see at the Maricopa line, while Maricopa will be kind of the baseline we're going to drive that to, that will be participated in by all counties. So it will be an agreed upon set of functionality that will be made standard across the state. But there will not be a uniqueness here. This vendor, Tyler Technologies, and they can speak for himself, but I'll speak for him at the moment. It is kind of very, very known for the fact that they do not do one-off customization. They build a product set that they can leverage and support across the board. That has been this customization model that many companies do for government entities has been a thing which has driven a lot of companies out of business, right? They get too many versions, custom versions of their code, and then they can't maintain it anymore. That's the thing I think Tyler has perfected, not getting involved with. So I don't expect that to happen. One of the things that I did not mention up front, because it feels like I pat myself on the back, but Arizona is known as one of the most innovative states in the judicial area across the country. And there are a lot of innovative programs that exist here and need automation support. So those were all laid out and agreed to by the entire statewide probation community in that RFP. Tyler has reviewed those and determined these are the things that they can do, will do, and can put into the product in this time frame. Mike, would you like to weigh in there at all?
I think you've covered it. I guess the only thing I'd share with the committee is the fact that while there's a lot of staff and a lot of involvement, there's 22 chief probation officers, juvenile court directors that work very, very closely. Our hope is to be involved on the front end, configure the system once, and roll it out in 15 counties essentially as a single configuration. And there's a lot of agreement about the need to standardize and support among that group.
So I'll ask on the back of some of that discussion. Carl, is it? Do you have a contractual commitment from Tyler that any enhancements are going to be rolled into the baseline of the product and maintained there?
Yes. So that is the mechanism Tyler typically uses. So generally, as we're working through the enhancement cycle, they look at that predominantly first and foremost as, is this a thing we can put in the base product and roll out to all of our customers? I mean, that's one of the advantages of a top system is great ideas coming up out of state of Washington get rolled into the product, and Arizona gets those as part of just its basic maintenance. So many of the things we're asking for will go into the base product. They also have an ability to configure kind of a switch model, which is, this is a very unique, innovative process Arizona is doing. We're not sure the other customers want it. It would be available to them, but it's turned on or off based on a switch in the technology set. So all of the things they build to are things that are in the base product set for long-term maintenance for the cost of the software as a service.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee members? I want to, can you pick up the project cost slides again? So, and I might have just gotten confused reviewing the pitch, but my impression was that you have money in hand for phase one, but not for phase two. Is that right?
We have money in hand for building, for doing the development activities for phase one and phase two. We're using special revenue funds for those. Okay. But we need operational money for ongoing software as a service.
Rebecca.
Yeah, I had a similar question on this slide. That total 7.6 development is for both phases one and phase two, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And phase two, you're hopeful, but it's not guaranteed. How much is just phase one?
Well, phase one is this development that you see here. It's, what is that, about $5-6 million is the development cost on phase one. And phase two is only a cost should we decide to exercise the option.
Okay. Mr. Fleetham.
Yes. Thanks for the presentation. I just want to clarify this. You said you have the development money, but you don't have the operational money in hand?
Correct.
And you're hoping that the legislature gets you this operational money. Is that the case? What would happen if you don't get the operational money?
If we don't get the operational money, we will be forced to operate in a very scaled down manner. It'll be troubling if we don't get the operational money. We'll have to go back to figuring out what we're going to do next. But it's not an option not to move forward, I guess is the point. We've got a current operational system which will not be operational in a few years, so we have to do something.
Okay, so this without the operational fund, I want to make sure that I have this right. The chairman will know I miss things from time to time in these presentations. So this is a system that changes require coding. It's not customizable by you or anyone else. Is that correct?
It is.
Configurable, not customizable.
Okay.
Is that correct?
It is configurable. So there's all kinds of mechanisms to configure it, and we'll be spending much of the first 6 months doing exactly that.
Okay.
In order to roll out to the four counties. There are certain features and functions that we've requested in the RFP that don't exist, and those do need to be coded and will be built into the baseline product.
Yeah. Okay, and one last question, and then I'll put myself on mute. Having experience with the system that you mentioned here, that if and I'll use I think I caught your example. If the state of Washington has this thing, and it's really great, then you can, provided that someone doesn't click the switch, so everybody has to get this. You can decide whether or not you want this. And I think the chairman understands we used to have a system at our agency where if somebody in South Carolina liked something, we had to take it whether they wanted it or not, whether we used it or not, or whether it messed up our system or not. That's what I want to make sure that there's some gates, you know, gates up that these things can't change in the middle of a process for you that will create major problems. And I think the chairman remember some of those problems that we had at our agency. So,
yeah. So I never answer questions with absolutes. Generally, the enhancements that are requested by their customers are built with the ability to be turned on or off. But anybody who does software development knows sometimes there's just core baseline things that the package is going to go in a direction, and those happen, right? And so those do end up impacting all customers. The commitment of the vendor is they will be reviewing those and making sure that those impacts are understood before they're released to the customers. But I don't think we can ever say, no, we're never going to get something we didn't like. That's part of our commercial off-the-shelf package. Sometimes you end up with the 8-track along with the radio.
Go ahead, Rebecca.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you say that the budget request you have is for $4.5 million?
I believe that's correct.
How does that align with the costs on this slide for operating costs? I'm seeing it doesn't raise to that level to year five. And if my understanding is correct, a PIDGE usually has operating costs that aren't the net, you're currently operating a system. So how do those numbers all relate to each other?
Oh, yes, you do see an inclining operational cost as we roll the juvenile system out. So we do have current operational costs. So 4.5 is what we believe the operational cost that we would need extra money in order to sustain the operation. It will take, clearly, when you start taking a system offline, you don't accrue the savings immediately as you start moving. So the cost of this current APEC system can't be like simply eaten in year two because it's still online and it will take a while to get it offline. And the courts operate its our IT budget as a large pool. The legislature gave us an automation pool to operate judicial automation activities. So many of the infrastructure components of those probation systems are leveraged in the bigger pot of everything that's going on to the court. So it takes a while to get down the road to where moving a set of applications off to another service powers the cost down as we get.
Any follow-up, Rebecca, or are you good with that? Okay.
No,
so I'm going to ask also a clarifying question and say, my impression was that the ask before the committee was to approve phase one, and I guess I can ask a point of order whether phase two would be handled as a change request or a separate page since it's the same platform I'm opened, I guess, either path. Because is that correct or not correct? I want to be sure the committee is clear on what the ask is of them.
No, I guess that's the pleasure of the committee. My preference is to not have to come to committee meetings very often. So if you wanted to approve the entire thing, I'm good. If you're only comfortable approving the first phase of this project, you want to talk again before we do phase two, by all means, at your pleasure.
Fair enough. And then for clarity, if at the end of phase one, what we see sort of in that year three column in terms of license maintenance, operational expenditures, and total operations, that's your steady state. If you stopped there and just maintained that going forward, is that your steady state?
Yes.
Okay.
Inflationary increases and whatever comes along.
Fine. Okay. All right. Any other questions from the committee? If not, Haley, I will turn it back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ACID is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the following conditions and advisory recommendations as presented. There we go. Okay,
committee members, any questions on the committee, or I'm sorry, on the conditions or the advisory recommendation? Or recommendations, I should say. Okay, anything else, Haley, before I move forward here?
Nope, please go ahead and take it to a vote.
All right, so I'm going to ask the committee, what is the pleasure of the committee with regards to the scoping of this approval? I feel like we need some dialogue.
Where's Eddie when you need him?
Well, you know, I appreciate that. Tyler is a pretty industry, best in class type of technology. So I don't have any issue with the product. In fact, here in Maricopa County, there's many opportunities for Tyler to look at, being used across the different elected offices, potentially. So I have no issue with the product. If the team feels that, they have a archaic technology today that's really, from a business perspective, very difficult to use and it's outdated. You know, trust me, I'm all about modernization. And, you know, I think Tyler probably has a great track record with other states using their technology for this particular business case. So from a technology perspective, I don't have an issue with it. I guess the question would be to me, you know, the expertise with our teams to learn a new technology, you know, the training aspect of it. I don't know how much of an impact it's going to be to move from our current technology to this one. You know, those things I don't know. But again, from a pilot perspective, I think there, you know, would be an industry standard here.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else? Rebecca, I do have a point of order I want to ask you because this is an unusual circumstance where we have a project brought forward that does require some incremental funding that's been submitted for budget and is unknown. So I want to be cautious about ITAC appearing to obligate the state in some way. What advice would you have for us on that point?
Very much puts me on the spot, Mr. Chair, or perhaps you read some of my recent memos with that same language to the GLBC. Some perspective, I think we've gone around on the role that the courts play in relation to ITAC and some of their autonomy. So that's one perspective. I am a little confused on the operating costs of the $4 million and how that, what if that might be net. What of that? And I completely understand if I ever heard correct, you're rolling out slowly with the counties. It's not a big bang, which is good. So you're not going to completely dismantle the system and get rid of all of your old costs. And I did not look at your budget request before. So it's I can understand that some of that 4.5 might be related to some other ancillary costs. So that does give me a little bit of concern that I don't know what those net costs really are relative to this project. The courts are the third part of government too, so they play they're different. It's a different process in terms of their budget.
All right. And I know Carl, you did seek to address this, and I know Mr. Byers, you've been silent, but I may invoke you in terms of not. Maybe speaking to how administratively this might be handled if for any reason the budget didn't come through. You know, Carl, you definitely said you would be as resourceful as you could be to ensure the ongoing operations. And, I understand the implications of that. But, Dave, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think to clarify, if the legislature provided no additional funding at all, I think we'd be able to sustain the adult system between us and our county partners. We might have to, there's two parts of the software package. There's the core functions, and then there's another component that adds great ability for the officers to have enhanced supervision. But I think if we didn't get any money, we would be able to probably sustain the adult program, even if we had to cut back on some of the software. But we would not be able to begin juvenile. We wouldn't be able to develop it then or run it. And so the ask of the 4.5 is, and we actually did have a budget hearing yesterday with the Senate and GLBC on this.
Okay.
But if we get that, then we can move ahead with juvenile and sustain both the development and the operation of both systems, which really is the desirable goal for the state.
Okay. Mr. Fleetham, you had your hand up.
Yes, I'm not sure if this is appropriate to ask this. So then, would it be appropriate if we make a motion to approve, if we approved under B, move with some sort of conditions based on funding for the second portion of this, the juvenile portion? Does that make sense to anybody here?
Yeah, I think where or I was. Not. Maybe coming down I appreciate Carl, your desire, understood to attend fewer meetings where possible. But I think given the circumstances, it feels appropriate to maybe, since it sounds like the funding is definitely in place to execute, deliver, and run phase one. And the question is, in order to get to phase two, some of this operational funding, in order to do everything that they're, you know, hoping to do with the system, that additional funding needs to come through. And so, and I'll ask Chuck whether you would recommend it be a change request, because it sounds like the plot, you know, assuming everything goes well, platform remains the same. We're really just talking about expanding the use of that platform. And it would be a, you know, could be, I thought could be handled as a change request.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, since I'm speaking up first time, Chuck Brown with Department of Administration. The short answer is yes. I think one way to handle some of the questions here is for the committee to approve phase one scope and ask that courts work with Asset and come back as the budgeting plays out and as their plan plays out, kind of in year two, and seek a change request to then bring in what they've now discovered is best for phase two, and based on what funding model the legislature gives them. I think it's the cleanest way to move forward if there's a question about total scope and total funding.
Thanks for that clarification, Chuck. All right, committee members, back to you. If one of you feels ready to make a proposal with regard to the project, make a motion, let's hear it, and then we can have a discussion if there's any questions about the motion. Do you need any further discussion to feel ready to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, it's Eddie.
Yep.
So back to Chuck, we could basically make a motion that we will approve a phase one, which sounds like it's already currently been approved by budgeting. Is that a correct statement?
Currently, there is sufficient funds available that the courts identified to cover the cost of phase one.
Okay. And then back to the team, if we were to do that, is there a plan then to go back through budgeting for this next coming session to acquire additional funds? Is that a plan already? Is that like plan?
Yeah, they're executing on that plan. I think I heard Mr. Byers say that they actually had an initial hearing yesterday.
Okay. If that's the case, I'll make the motion that we approve phase one of this particular project, and that it will be the responsibility of the team to go back for phase two as a normal budgeting process would be.
Okay. I'll say, Chuck, is that clear enough?
That's clear enough for me. I'm assuming you're accepting the conditions that were presented.
I think that any discussion or clarification you need with regard to that motion? Okay, hearing none, do we have a second on that motion?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Fleetham. All right, we're going to get there. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Fantastic. Thank you. Carl, I guess we'll see you in somewhere about 2 years.
All right. Thank you.
We'll talk about this one. Excited to see. I think I was most excited about was hearing how all of the business stakeholders that are coming to align to the capabilities of the platform and seek to minimize the customization. I would love to hear that on a more frequent basis. good luck with your project.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, before you move to the next one, just because we had David Byers' voice on some of the discussion, I just want on the record that he abstained from the vote.
Correct. He did abstain from the vote. And then I will also, go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry, I saw you
started. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to go to a meeting with the Chief Justice, but my proxy, Stuart Bruner, is on the line and will help keep your quorum. So good luck on the other projects.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Byers. And Stuart, thanks for stepping in. We will note that for the record that Stuart is now voting on behalf of the courts. And we will move forward to the next item in our agenda.
As long as I don't have to answer Rebecca's financial questions, we're fine.
That'll be your number one thing that you'll have to answer.
No.
All right. Department of Transportation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Michael Carpenter. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by the Department of Transportation, who will introduce themselves after a brief overview of the project. The Department of Transportation is seeking approval to renew and upgrade the current software system used in fraud prevention at the Motor Vehicle Department. The proposed solution will improve process times and customer service by utilizing photo image matching technology with the MVD Max system to verify an applicant's identity. At this time, I'll turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the project and answer any questions.
Good afternoon. My name is Bill Miller. I'm sitting in for Steve West. I'm the deputy CIO for ADOT, joined with Catherine Dicker, who is the IT project manager for this, and Thomas Branham, who is ADOT CISO. So I don't have an elaborate presentation like the previous one, so I'm going to go very high level. So Michael did a great job explaining. So our project is basically a driver's license photo safety, fraud, and protection and prevention. So what it does is it does some photo matching against all of the pictures that are in our motor vehicle system and looks for anomalies. We're looking to upgrade the system from its current on-prem to a SaaS solution. There was an RFP that was put out on the street in March of 2022. There were three responses to the RFP. The evaluation committee took about 12 weeks. They selected NEC on, looks like July 25th. And the project was 100% awarded on our end. And so NEC was chosen to move forward with the SaaS solution. Any questions for us?
I'll just say maybe for clarification, Bill. Is this solution really just used in MVD locations and potentially with your authorized third parties?
Yes, it's actually administered through our enforcement compliance division. That is ADOT's law enforcement group. And they actually run the security software against the driver's license picture that MVD captures.
Okay. So for in the context of a user experience, what's happening? Is this if I go in to renew my driver's license, I'm standing there, I present my photo ID, are they doing some matching in that real time, or is this happening kind of after the fact?
Typically after the fact.
Okay.
Thomas, do you know the cadence exactly?
I do. Yeah, it is after the fact.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So this is sort of a back office process that's seeking to verify and identify fraud, but not necessarily real time as people are experiencing the front desk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thanks for that clarification. Eddie, I saw you had your hand up.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Can you actually explain how the current methodology for fraud detection with these photos are doing today? And then explain by going to the new system, you know, what the improvement's going to be, because I guess I just didn't get a good sense of what, you know, you currently are doing today and why it's not a good process, you know, business practice versus what you're moving to.
Yes, I'll take a stab at it, and then Thomas, if you can step in and help me here. So the biggest thing is going to the SaaS solution. So currently we have it on-prem, so we manage servers on-prem. We have to keep the lifecycle of the hardware up to date. The backups, it's not a cloud solution. So moving to the SaaS solution in the cloud will give us the ability to keep current with the industry. The vendor will keep the database current. It allows for things to move faster for the identification when there is an anomaly with a driver's license. There are some enhanced features that the industry is using. So the underlying technology is the facial rec. But it's not just that. There's much more about the fraud and the protection and the preservation of the driver's license picture. So it's everything is just happening. I guess would be faster and better. And I know that doesn't break it down. It's just what we're using now is 10 years old. The technology of on-prem servers, old hardware, not being able to keep the storage up to date as the pictures grow. Thomas, can you add to?
No, I think you covered it. We're following cloud first strategy, and Bill, you I think you hit all the high points. So were there any questions from that?
Well, and maybe to clarify, it's you're actually staying with the same provider.
Yes.
From a vendor standpoint, you're moving from what had been a premise-based solution to their cloud-based offering.
Yes.
And in that move and upgrade, you're going to gain some new enhanced capabilities, everything you've had before, and we'll say, you know, it sounds like there's some maybe improved features that will assist in identifying fraud going forward.
Yes.
Okay. Catherine, that's all you had your hand up?
Yeah, hi, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. To Eddie's question, I did want to add an additional item on there. So it is the same system. There is an improved algorithm that comes with the new system. And it allows enhanced image quality. So customers that are wearing headgear for medical or religious purposes, or glasses, or have facial hair, that in the current system, that can cause some inefficiencies. And so this new one, that algorithm is updated, so it improves those matches. That's all I wanted to add.
Thank you. Mr. Cook.
Thank you for explaining that to me, because it wasn't clear. And I think if you're using the current system, which is on-prem, and this is basically a cloud solution of the same software, then really your processes won't change per se from the functionality part. So you provided the clarification. Thank you.
All right.
Right.
Thanks. Go ahead, Bill.
That's pretty much all we had. If there's any other questions, we'll be able to answer them.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and step forward in the slides. So I think we talked about all of this already.
Yeah. This was the timeline.
Okay.
That was for the RFP. So this is the responsibilities. So agency is ADOT. So the agency requirements on the left are what we have now. The shared is what we currently do, and the vendor is what they're going to do in the new system. So as you request from Mr. Cook, it's our processes won't change. It's just we're going to take availability of the new offering that they have, and then mostly the cloud and the on-prem and the stability factor of it, the disaster recovery aspect, all of the stuff that happens when you move into the cloud.
So I don't know, Stuart, go ahead and ask your question. That one generated one for me as well. Stuart?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I think I noticed there was an image conversion component to this, which adds a great deal of complexity. I wonder if we could get some explanation of that.
Yeah, and I'll say tag on to the image conversion. I'm going to, my general question is going to be data, right? is there a data migration? Is that fully automated? How is that being handled in this process? So I assume you've got to, shift from the data you have on premise to their cloud solution. What are the responsibilities and the plan for that? But let's start with Stuart's image question.
Catherine or Thomas, can you answer that?
I can't answer the image conversion. Thomas, do you know about that?
I didn't think there was a change to image conversion. So MVD is the source of record. That data passes from, and that's in Azure GovCloud. That data passes over an encrypted IPsec tunnel to the vendor NEC to their GovCloud. I'm not familiar with anything new relative to migration.
In the upgrade process, is there any image? It sounds like, are you saying, Thomas, the images are currently in your Azure cloud?
I'm saying that we have images in our cloud.
Okay.
And those are transmitted to NEC where they run their algorithms against them, and then we're a consumer of those from a fraud perspective.
Okay. So in terms of adopting the new system, there's not a bulk image conversion process involved?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. You know, Catherine, as far as bulk image.
No, unfortunately, we haven't been able to meet with the vendor, so I don't have all that information yet. Okay. I apologize.
Okay, Stuart?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that I took that from the overview of the proposed solution slide, which is, I'm not sure.
Let's see where we can see that.
Go backwards a little bit. It's overview of proposed solution. look at that sentence. It says ECD is looking to upgrade a program management software that includes conversion of all images. That's where I go.
Yep. So I guess our question there, is it conversion or is it migration?
Or yeah. Just uplift, you know.
From, yeah. And again, I think conversion means from on-prem to cloud, as I read that. So when I read it, I didn't read it as converting from one type of image to another type of image. It was moving it from one system to the next is how I read that.
Okay, thanks.
And Mr. Chairman, did you get your question answered about the data?
Well, I think it, yeah. So I guess
it's my contained in that, I guess. Is,
yeah, really, it sounds like we may be on a, you know, a prior version or their cloud version may have some differences from the version we're running on-premise today. I assume there's a data migration process?
Yes.
And how well do we understand that? And or have we identified who's responsible for what components of that?
Yeah, so let's go back to the responsibility slide and see. So requirement definition, data validation, and you see upgrade implementation, okay. Data migration.
Vendor contractors, data migration.
Yeah, so the vendor's responsible.
All right. Okay, thanks.
And our timeline is, if we get approval, we will start this month and work through October for the requirements and design. Data migration through December. Development starts September through November in parallel with the data migration. And as we see, we work through application training, implementation, and then closing the project out March of 23. Questions?
I guess maybe just with the development part of it, is that considered custom development? Are we really doing things that are completely unique in Arizona that require customization, or is that really the deployment and configuration of a COTS solution?
Yes, I believe it's that. Catherine, can you verify that?
Yeah, so this is the schedule that the vendor gave in the PIDGE. Again, I haven't been able to meet with them to get exactly what all of this means. And so once we have that kickoff meeting, well, if it gets approved and we're able to have that kickoff meeting, we break that down. But typically with a SaaS solution implementation, this development isn't true development. It's install and configuration. Okay. And so I agree with you on that comment, but that's how I also perceive that phase.
All right. Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question as relates to when fraud is determined in your team, does the information get turned over to the Attorney General's office? And the question I'm leading to is, will this system be compatible to what other, you know, downline systems as it relates to the other law enforcement agencies, you know, maybe like Attorney General? Is there any incompatibility from what you're doing today versus what the system will? The new system will be as it relates to those other agencies?
Yeah, so I'll answer first and then I'll turn it over to Thomas. From my understanding, because it's the same company, the same process will be used once fraud is detected. So this process is all the way up until fraud is detected. And then once fraud is detected, I believe the same process occurs now. The internal part of ECD, which is the OIG group, handles that moving forward. Thomas, do you have anything to add?
That's correct. There's no change to that.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Bruner, you're muted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious, Mr. Miller, about two portions of data migration here, data migration and data migration catch-up. Why wouldn't there just be a data migration line that went from September 21 through February 22nd?
Catherine, can you, and again, because we haven't had a chance to meet with NEC, not sure that she's going to be able to answer that, but Catherine, can you build that?
So normally what they'll do is in the data migration, they'll have a cyclical. So throughout this data migration, it'll be an initial load. We do validation. And it's a cycle. Why they broke it up like this, I'm not too sure. But I have seen this before in the past with vendors. It's just that last part. So the first part of the data migration is typically iterative with data validation, and then that last part is actually now catching up production data in cycles. And the way they broke it up like this is different, but I think you're accurate. It could have just been one bar.
Mr. Chairman, if I could follow up on that. So, Ms. Dickert, would your, I guess, estimate be that maybe 10 or 15% of the data is in the first bar and then the remaining 85 or 90% is done in the second bar? Is that based on your experience?
No. So generally, when they'll do an initial data load, it depends. Honestly, it depends how this vendor does it. But what they'll do is they'll do a data dump. And they do it into this environment because it's not yet live. And then ADOT goes in and we validate data. You can validate the system. But for now, this initial part, from what I see, is a data dump of all the data that they have that they can retrieve. We validate, we find any nuances or any missing data. We do that validation likely over this time frame two or three times. And then typically at the end is what I see at this December 16th is we would have a data validation sign off saying what's been mapped over that will come over, we're good with, so that that last part is just production data updates.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just my usual concern about these things, when you don't have the vendor on the hook yet, you have to go to ITAC, you get a chicken and egg situation where we're now talking about speculating about what the vendor might really do, and yet we're going to vote on this project. So just a concern I'd read.
Yeah, I can add one thing too. So one of the other things too is the previous system is going to, the old system is going to be live until we shut that off and turn this on. So pictures are still coming in. And so I think the data catch-up is also going to be too, as they do that initial migration, the old system is still going to be building photos and they're going to have to do the data catch-up in order to get everything over on final install of the new system. So that's also the data. Again, I agree with Catherine. I would have thought it would have been closer to the go live date, not necessarily in the middle. But I believe we can work with them on that. Catherine's an excellent PM.
Okay, thank you.
All right. If there are any other questions, you can proceed forward.
Okay, so we're fully funded for this request. There's no outstanding request for budget. Questions?
Let's roll the slide forward. Is there anything after this one?
It's just the total budget that we have available and how it's going to be spent.
Okay.
And then this is how we measure the success of it. An internal customer will validate it as we move forward. The new software will provide technology upgrades. We talked about that. Any questions?
All right, we'll open it up to any other questions we haven't addressed along the way here. If there are no further questions, I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ASSET is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the standard conditions as presented.
All right, we'll give everybody a moment to digest those. Those are the standard conditions. If there is no discussion on that, I'll take a motion with regard to the project.
Still moved.
Thank you, Mr. Fleetham. Do we have a second?
I'll second, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Romer. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? Okay, thank you. That's a unanimous vote. Good luck, Bill, Thomas, and Catherine. Thanks for your presentation today.
Thank you, committee. Have a great day.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, next item up on our agenda, Department of Economic Security with their DERS RSA modernization project.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Department of Economic Security, who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of the project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Department of Economic Security is seeking approval to replace the legacy System 7 application used by the Division of Employment and Rehabilitation Services, Rehabilitation Services Administration, with the cloud-based infrastructure and software as a service solution. At this time, I'll turn it over to the project team to present any additional information regarding the proposed project, answer any questions.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Bob, my name is Mark Darmer. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Department of Economic Security. I'm joined today by Anna Hunter, who is our Assistant Director for the Division of Employment and Rehabilitation Services, and Dennis Esplund, who is our Project Manager for the project. Yes, Chuck.
Thanks, Mark. Sorry to interrupt you, but just to help the committee, if you could go one slide back, please. So for committee members, this project is in a procurement situation where there's going to be information. If you want to discuss and ask questions about, we'll have to go into executive session. The presentation here is public that Mark's prepared to go through. If you have detailed questions about what's in the PIDG and SOW, things like that, we'll need to go into executive session so that we don't interrupt the procurement process.
Thank you, Chuck.
Thanks, Chuck.
If we can go ahead and proceed. Next slide, please. So a little bit of background on the project and the initiative that we're talking about today. The existing system, Libra System 7, was implemented in 2009. And we have not been able to make upgrades to that system since May of 2015. That was due to vendor limitations that they were not able to make enhancements beyond federal required changes that we needed to make. So we have been in a little bit of a limbo since 2015 to be able to make any enhancements that would substantially benefit the program and the end users of the application. So the benefit to the agency and our clients and constituents, we will have a new modern system, which will be, as Bob pointed out, cloud-based and a software as a solution product. And it will provide assistive technology beyond what we currently have today. And in the RSA program, that is the mainstay of the program, is serving individuals who are blind, visually impaired, or have other cognitive impairments, and their need and really necessity for being able to participate actively in the program is to have that assistive technology available when they interact with the agency. And we will also be looking to automate several manual processes that we currently have in place due to the limitations of the existing system. And again, it is a software as a service application that we are looking at moving forward with, and it will eliminate the need for DES to have that application on-prem and support it in our existing DES data center. Next slide. The proposed solution, again, is a SaaS solution. It will be a third-party cloud-hosted solution, and it is a configurable COTS application that we are looking for. And we will also have some configuration needed just for Arizona specialization. That is minimal. We are trying as much as possible to use the COTS solution that will be identified. We will be going through data conversion. That will be on behalf of the vendor that they will need to do that data conversion. DES, of course, will be doing testing of that data once it is converted, but that is a requirement on the vendor, no matter which solution is selected. Operations and maintenance services, again, will be the responsibility of the vendor, as will any disaster recovery services that need to be put in place. We are also looking at the vendor to do any federally mandated changes. We do have some federally mandated changes that come to the program, and the vendor would be responsible for implementing those into the selected application. Next slide, please. The proposed solution, this gives you a general overview of what we received when we put out the RFP. This was a competitively bid project. So we did receive six responses to the RFP, and those responses ranged in cost from approximately $8 million to $75 million, quite a wide swing in the proposed solutions. Next slide. This slide delineates responsibilities between the agency, the vendor, and what will be shared responsibilities. As you can see, it's quite an extensive list, but the bulk of the actual implementation will be on the vendor themselves. We will certainly provide state project management, deliverables review. We're doing a requirements matrix to trace those requirements back and ensure that all requirements are met. Any policy decisions, identify configuration changes, defining the customization needs, that will be on the agency. We will be doing joint application design meetings, scope management schedule, that'll be shared. And of course, the vendor responsibilities, installation of the software, management of the cloud environment, operations and maintenance, things along those lines. Next slide, please. This gives you an estimated project start and timeline. We are looking at starting in November of this year, and the project will run through the first portion, which is the development and integration, which will be years 1 and 2. And we are looking at a third year associated with our blind enterprise program. That's the slightly darker shaded block that will take place in year 2 and 3. The operations and maintenance period, again, will start in year 3 for that increment 1, and increment 2 operations and maintenance would commence in year 4. And for the out years, all three programs would be in operations and maintenance. Next slide, please. What success looks like. Of course, we always strive for greater efficiency for our team members that use the application. We are currently experiencing, as I indicated, some manual processes. With the existing system, we aim to eliminate those and automate those processes. Clients and vendors can update their own data using mobile devices. We do want this application to be available on mobile devices, especially with many of our clients having visual impairment or hearing impairment. They use their mobile devices quite frequently and have specialized applications on those. So we do want this to be a mobile available application. Of course, all federal reporting is a requirement for the system without doing any manual intervention. And then also the infrastructure application maintenance and technology upgrades would be provided by the vendor in their hosted environment. Measures of success, the VOC Rehab, older individuals who are blind and BEP programs are implemented in the three-year timeline or less within the allocated budget. Federal reporting is accurate. The new system meets all service level agreement performance thresholds. Eligibility determination is done correctly. Benefit payments associated with any of those programs are timely and accurate, and the workers, help desk, and operations staff are all trained by the vendor. Next slide, please. And with that, I will open it up to any questions. As Chuck indicated, we may need to go into the executive session depending upon the nature of the questions that may be asked.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's interesting when you have a presentation and you don't even know who the vendor is. And you don't know, and the pitch had hardly any information in it. And maybe it's because of procurement, but it's hard to approve of something where you don't even know a lot of those details. So is the vendor not something that we can discuss in open meeting?
Right. No, because the procurement's still open, any questions get specific on the vendor, underlying technology, anything that could be specific to a solution, they would identify who a vendor was because they know what their proposals are.
Exactly.
All those things are have to go into executive session so that we're not breaking down the procurement process and exposing something ahead of time. So
I mean, the question would be, are they, you know, on a current state contract, or are we using this product? No doubt it's a very unique kind of type of technology, but I don't know if it's already currently being used within the state. They're on a state contract. I mean, maybe if that is the case, we don't have to go to executive sessions because, Mr. Chair, you and your team are familiar with the technology. I just don't know that.
That's a good question that even I don't think I know the answer to. So, okay. Mr. Fleetham, you're muted.
Excuse me. I have questions that I understand need to be answered in executive sessions. So.
Okay. All right. So if there isn't anything general, what I'll recommend, committee, if you will check your email, you have an email from Irene Robayo on our team. She sent that about 12, this was 5 minutes after 12 today. It has a separate link for the executive session. We can move over to that meeting. Once we confirm we've got everybody there, we can then pick up with our questions. And Chuck, what else do we need to cover before we do that?
You need a motion to go into executive session.
There we go.
A second and a vote, and then you can move into executive session.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move to go to executive session.
Okay, and do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Fleetham.
Quick question. Who was where did the email? Who sent the email?
Irene.
Irene.
And that came out earlier today?
Yeah, at 12:05 p.m. is when it hit my inbox. So should be in there titled September 21, 2022 ITAC meeting information.
Hang on here.
Chairman, just for clarification, we're leaving this meeting, going to that one, correct?
Yeah, we will. Yeah, so committee members, you will exit this meeting and you will click the link for the executive session meeting. Now, before we do that, though, we had a motion, we had a second. I need the vote. So all those in favor of moving to executive session?
Aye.
Okay. That's unanimous. Any opposed? Okay, we have got a unanimous vote there. Irene, I know it has resent the email to you, so should be popping in the top of your inbox. Let's confirm everybody sees that, understands which link they need to click on before we head out in different directions.
That is the email with the link ending in PAT, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Good. Okay.
Good.
All right. Okay, folks, we will see those members over in the executive session. Chuck, anything else before we go?
Just to put it on the record, this meeting will stay open. We have the executive session in progress up there for anybody watching on streaming. The committee will be back as soon as it concludes its executive session.
Thank you, Chuck. All right, folks, we'll see you over there.
It'll open now if they can get the...
Okay, as we gather back from the executive session, I'll ask staff to keep an eye on things, confirm when we have our quorum and all our attendance back.
Mr. Chairman, the committee is back. You have a quorum again, the same quorum as when you left. You can call it back to order.
All right, we'll call the meeting back to order, and we will pick up. Having concluded our executive session, if there are any further general questions, I will turn it back to Mr. Mussey.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, ASSET is recommending that the PIDG be approved with the standard conditions as presented, with the addition of the following. Prior to moving any state data into the vendor-hosted environment and or spending of funds, the agency must work with the Department of Administration and the Department of Homeland Security Cyber Command to assure Arizona Baseline Security Controls document is completed and approved by Cyber Command in order to ensure that the selected solution will be will provide an appropriate level of protection for state data.
All right, thanks, Bob. Any questions or discussion on the conditions? If not, I'll take a motion with regard to the project.
I move with the accept the project with conditions as presented.
Thank you, Mr. Fleeton. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Romer. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? Okay, that's a unanimous vote. Thank you, Mark and the DES team. Great presentation. Thanks for the good discussion in the executive session as well. Good luck with the project.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Have a good afternoon.
All right. We are moving on to our next section, which is a change request from the State Board for Charter Schools.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Arizona State Board for Charter Schools, who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of the project change request. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, ASBCS is requesting approval to replace its current online system in order to provide better functionality, means of communication, transparency, accessibility, navigability, and improved usability for ASBCS staff, charter holders, and public users. At this time, I'll turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed change request and answer any questions you may have.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I am Ashley Berg, Executive Director of the Arizona State Board for Charter Schools. Today, I will be presenting to you the board's change request to modernize its new online platform. Along with me today is Daniel Coben, Assistant Director of Agency and Charter Holder Operations at the Arizona State Board for Charter Schools. Dan is our agency's lead on this project. And I also have with me Julie Butcher, our Consulting Manager with MSS Business Transformation Advisory. The board has contracted with MSS BTA for technical support throughout this project. Julie's camera cannot be turned on today, but please know that she is here and participating, and both Dan and Julie are available to answer any questions you may have. Before going further into detail about the board's request, I'm going to provide you with a brief background and some information about our agency. The State Board for Charter Schools was legislatively created in 1995. We have an 11-member board consisting of the state's elected superintendent of public instruction, and public members appointed by the governor. it is our agency's responsibility to authorize or contract with entities to provide quality charter schools and ensure those charters meet the quality expectations set by the board. Although we are a relatively small agency with less than 20 employees, our charter portfolio is one of the largest in the country, as we go back and forth with Texas as being the largest. Our board is currently authorizing over 550 charter schools in the state of Arizona, serving nearly 22% of Arizona's K-12 population. Our board processes are robust and are used as examples for other authorizers throughout the country. The board's online system maintains all board processes and contractual documentation. It is where all changes or amendments to a charter's contract are processed. Formal communications are done to ensure legal documentation and evidence is maintained, and charter holder accountability dashboards, which the board utilizes to ensure contractual compliance, are posted for public viewing. Starting in FY 2022, the board was approved for $614,000 in APF funding to begin this work. We worked with the State Procurement Office to release the RFP, and with additional information on the potential contracted amount, the board requested additional monies for development. Therefore, the board in FY 2023 was appropriated an additional $504,900 in its general fund to support the development of a new system. Once the additional appropriations were approved, the State Procurement Office did award the contract. Therefore, we are coming to you today to change or update our request for development and deployment of the board's online system. Next slide, please. As an introduction to the board's project of modernizing its online system, the board's current system, which was built in 2007, is severely out of date. Only 16 out of the agency's 128 must-have requirements are met in the current system. At this time, the system is not able to be updated or band-aided without creating new problems. The new system will allow the board to update its systems and expectations to maintain compliance to continual changes in education law and regulations. It will improve portfolio compliance and quality of schools through higher visibility of board requirements, and it will have better functionality, improved communication, transparency, accessibility, and usability for board staff, charter holders, and the public. Okay, next slide. The State Procurement Office has awarded the contract, and the contract went to Cloud Synapse. The hope is that the system will be completed before the end of the fiscal year and close to the end of the school year. Through our contract with Cloud Synapse, the completed system will not only provide, will not only provide better functionality, communication, transparency for board staff, charter holders, and the public, but it will be a one-stop shop for all agency processes and needs. The new system will be housed on a Salesforce platform, and it will meet the business requirements of the board, therefore improving processing time and efficiency of the board. Okay, I will hurry. I see that your meeting ends in 10 minutes. If you want to go to the next slide. Next slide. So I think I already talked about that briefly. Okay, so just to outline just different responsibilities of the three entities, Cloud Synapse is the vendor that has been chosen for the contract. MSSBTA will be the contracted vendor that will support the board as a technical support, as we only have less than 20 employees and no one on our staff that has IT background. And then Synapse Studios is our legacy system provider, and they will continue to support our system through deployment. Next slide, please. This is just a breakdown of our costs. Total costs for development will be $1,097,617, and then ongoing cost is $108,000. Next slide. I think that we've somewhat gone through that. The MSSBTA will provide most of the change management and support. With that, I am happy to answer any questions, and both Dan and Julie are here to answer questions as well.
All right, thank you, Ashley. Committee members, any questions? Rebecca.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ashley. And I think this is a long time coming. I was in a prior position auditing the charter school board, and the system was not great then. I do have a question, though, for Salesforce. I know a lot of our smaller boards are switching over on the licensing side are switching over from Salesforce due to some lack of experience and personnel who can work with a system like that. And our larger boards are sticking with the Salesforce because it has a lot more functionality. Since you mentioned you don't have IT staff, who is responsible once you do go live if there is something that needs to be modified, or if there's a change to statute and something changes and you need that system to change for that, who would be responsible for updating the system?
Yeah, Chairman and Ms. Pereira, it's actually part of the contract with Cloud Synapse. So we do have additional development included in our ongoing costs. So Cloud Synapse will stay on for additional development and any changes that may be needed in the future. But most of the changes that we anticipate needing to do for statutory changes that will come in the future will likely be changes that we can do on our end as staff that won't be true development changes. And as a non-IT person, I hope I'm explaining that correctly, but it's our understanding that we can make most of the changes on our end.
Okay. And then I did hear you also say, Ashley, that you're engaging MSS to act as, I'll say, your advocate, right, from the charter board's perspective to ensure that you receive that for which you are contracting. And they can handle the, we'll say, technical translation for you. So I'm encouraged there. And I think one role that they may also have is ensuring that Cloud Synapse extracts from you the business requirements to ensure that the system goes in with all of the right things up front. So that's good. Okay, any other questions from the committee? Okay, if not. Go ahead, Stuart.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just on the heels of looking at two pidges that had to be approved before an award could be made, am I correct in assessing that the award's already been made on this and now we're looking at the pidge?
Correct. I believe that's correct.
Why would that be?
Chuck?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mr. Brewer, on this one, you're actually looking at a change request that was actually PIDGE already approved to initiate access to the APF monies and the project, okay. Do all of kind of the preparatory work. So now that we're exceeding the asset approval authority, it's before ITAC.
That makes perfect sense. So thank you there, Mr. Brown. I missed that previous meeting.
Yeah, no, it was the change in the addition that kicked it up here to ITAC.
Got it. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. If not, I think, Bob, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. NSSET is recommending that the change request be approved with the standard conditions as presented.
All right. Any questions or concerns on the conditions? If there are none, I'll take a motion with regard to the project.
Mr. Chairman, are those the same conditions as with the original approval?
Second, this is Jiggy.
Well, let's go back and answer Stewart's question first. Chuck.
Mr. Chairman, since the original approval, we've had a third standard condition, which centers around the state system security plan in partnership with Homeland Security. So there is a slight difference than the original project would have had.
So it's the two original with the addition of the state security plan.
Well, again, I'll say there's the standard guidelines that we use, but again, these are conditions that go in as effect as part of the ITAC vote today.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So if there are any further questions, we'll take a motion with regard to the project.
I approve the motion.
Thank you, Jaggy. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Romer. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And any opposed or abstentions? Okay. Very good. That's a unanimous vote. Thanks, Ashley, and other members that were here. All right. We've got 4 minutes. We have a few informational updates. Chuck, do we have time to cover, or we want to handle these just as they've been delivered in written form?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think you have time to fairly cover any of your informational updates. There were three of them. One was intended to only be in writing anyway, so we have the Atlas project before you with an informational update. It's available to the committee. Committee members can certainly reach out to staff if they want to see this back on the agenda for another informational update next month. The second one was the School Finance Transparency Portal, which is out of ADOA, which was due for a September update at request of the committee. Again, it's in writing. The update is there. If you'd like to see it back on the agenda, either one of those in August, you can either say it now or let staff know, and we'll pull it up in October and work with the agencies.
Okay. Thanks, Chuck. I'll go ahead and ask the committee, if you had time to review those informational updates, did anyone have any questions on that? You want to just go ahead and tell us now that you'd like to see this come back in October. If not, we remain open. If there is something that pops up in there for you, otherwise, I will call the meeting to a close. Our next meeting is scheduled for October 19th. Thanks, everyone, for getting us through all the content today. Good discussions, and I think we made some good recommendations. So thank you all. Have a great afternoon.
Good to see Eddie without a hat for once. Never see Eddie without a hat.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, staff, let's go ahead and stop the streamings and the recording.